welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba through the hour, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Do you have a question for Zorba? We have an open line now for you at 1-800-462-7413. Your calls and Zorba some interesting research to talk over.
Yes, we're going to talk about what do you do with the leftover medicines that you have in your house that you're not using and the risks associated with getting rid of it.
That's interesting. What else?
And kids' brains, kids who have attention deficit disorder. What is the maturity level of their brains? Is it a neuroplastic issue? We'll talk about the newest research.
Okay, that coming up. We have our medical myth buster later in the hour. Do kids tend to look like their dads? Zorba will answer that question. What's our recipe?
Royan's vegetable pie. It's a great recipe for anyone who wants to put more veggies in their life.
This one from a Georgetown, Kentucky listener, Royan Betty. That'll be up in about, 25 minutes or so. Again, that number, if you want to talk with Zorba, 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's welcome a listener now from Omena, Michigan. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you?
Well, you can help me by letting me know if I'm just getting to be an old man or if potentially there's some sort of deficiency in my diet that's leading me to burst blood vessels in my hands. It only happens occasionally, but say if I pick up a bucket or something heavy, occasionally I have embolisms or I break blood vessels in my hands.
So old man or deficiency in diet? It could be both, you know.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Because we get older and you have a deficiency. Well, let me ask a couple of questions. Do you take an aspirin every day?
I do not.
Okay, so and the reason is a lot of people don't realize, hey, I take an aspirin every day to prevent my blood from clotting in my heart and in my brain, and then I get these little black and blue spots on my hand. What's happening? Well, that's exactly what happens when you don't clot as well. Are you on any medications at all? Are you on steroids, prednisone, for instance?
None whatsoever, okay. Actually.
The reason is that can be another reason to have this. And the final thing is, generally, as we get older, what happens is the capillaries that we have in our artery, in our basic peripheral circulation around our skin, become more fragile. Our skin becomes more fragile when we're young and we're athletic, we'll say, or even not athletic, and we're 8 or 9 or 10. We fall down, we get a black and blue mark. It's gone in 3 or 4 days. You get a black and blue mark when I fall on the ski hill, you know, and what happens is it stays there for a few weeks, not a few days. And what these little mini breaks occur, A, because of aging, and B, your body doesn't clean them up nearly as quickly. So it's sort of a combination of things. But yes, that's if it's not medicines, that's probably what it is now. You could have a major medical problem. You really sometimes need to have a blood test with things if you have a lot of bleeding going on. But for the most part, yeah, it's a mature thing.
How often?
It's associated with maturity.
How often does this happen?
You know, it only really happens maybe 4 or 5 times out of the year, but it makes me hesitant before I go picking something up that I think could cause that to happen. So I thought if there's something that I could do in my diet or something of that nature.
Well, four or five times a year, all of a sudden you get a big blood vessel that breaks? Or tell me a little bit.
The other day I picked up a rather heavy door, and nearly a quarter of the palm of my right hand ended up having a subcutaneous bruise underneath. And it wasn't from an impact. It was just picking up something.
Right, right. Well, what happens is you picked up a heavy door, you put pressure on that. Because you're an older guy, your blood vessels then broke and did that. And you know what it means? It says, hey, when you lift very heavy things, you have to be careful. That may still not do it. You may have to use gloves. But we can talk about diet, too.
Don't you have somebody else around, a wife or somebody, who could pick up that door for you?
Oh, I wish. wish I did.
That would be the way to do it, to have a wife. You know, when you think from a diet point of view, it's a vitamin K issue. But the fact is, we make vitamin K. We actually don't get it from our diet. We only make it with, you know, within our body. And there are other things, blood thinners and so on, do it. But for the most part, diet's not going to do it. Tom is right. You need somebody to do the work for you. Pay out that money. Don't lift the door. End of problem.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate the call. 800-462-7413. Caller's waiting, but a line open for you at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, let's talk about this issue of used drugs, leftover drugs, and what to do about them.
Yeah, well, this is not a small issue. It's a big issue. First of all, let's talk about narcotics. I mean, those are the leftover drugs that we kind of worry about the most. You know, for the most part, we worry because kids often, not uncommonly, will go into the grandparents' house. They'll know the grandma or grandpa has some painkillers because they talk about them all the time, and they'll take out a few pills out of the medicine chest, or they'll take it out of their parents' medicine chest. And the estimate by the FDA now is that young people who are taking narcotics, OxyContin, hydrocodone, oxycodone, Percocet, variety of names, get them from a friend or a relative's medicine cabinet that has not been secured.
Yeah, and one of the problems is people will use a few of these and then stop using them, and the thing will sit there in the medicine cabinet and be there until some...
Well, I don't know about you, but that's happened to me. I had some shoulder surgery the other year, and, you know, I took a few pills when it bothered me, and then I put it up on the shelf just in case, you know, I've got a problem. And the other day I was looking through my medicine cabinet. As you can imagine, I'm a doctor. I've got lots of stuff. And I said, oh, my gosh, this is 10 years old.
Yeah.
Now, it turns out that particular drug is stable. And 10 years old still means it actually works. There's a kid who came into my house and took it. I wouldn't know.
Yeah. But the problem is, what to do with these?
Well, the feds have decided do not flush drugs down the toilet, that it gets into the water supply. It's a big issue when it comes to things such as antibiotics and hormones. And supposedly there are flush-friendly things. In other words, there are drugs you can use and flush down the toilet. Forget it. Nobody except for the people with obsessive-compulsive disorder would bother to look at the list. So how do you get rid of it? Well, a new recommendation is you take it and you mix it with something that is disgusting, like kitty litter. Well, I don't have a cat, so I don't know how to get kitty litter. Doggy doo, that was another recommendation.
Well, mix them in with...
Well, because there are kids who go through, they're dumpster divers. They go through the garbage cans of older adults looking for medications in bottles. So they go through the garbage looking for medication in bottles. You know, this is a hard problem to solve. Yes, yeah. There are places you can bring them to your hospital. A lot of pharmacies will get rid of them. And I don't really have the solution, but I do have one solution. If you've got a controlled substance, put it under lock and key, and when you get rid of it, make sure you wrap it up in something so that nobody can see very easily what's in the bottle. Don't just throw the bottle in the garbage. Maybe put it in a black garbage bag. Put it in with perishables so it's kind of in the yucky part of the garbage, and people won't suspect. And it'll be safer.
Okay. 800-462-7413. Toll free if you want to talk with Zorba. On we go to Knoxville, Tennessee now. Hi.
Hi, Tom.
What's up?
I have a question about my partner's knee. She is a soccer player and was a soccer player for probably about 18 years. And now she's a soccer coach. And about 2 weeks ago, she got hit full impact with a swinging cleat on somebody's foot. They hit her full on the knee.
Ouch.
It swelled up to about the size of a grapefruit. And it was like that for about a week with some real light bluish bruising around the outside of it. And now it has gone down to about the size of a walnut. The bruising is gone, but when you move the knot back and forth, it's not solid. It's very squishy, but it moves back and forth and back and forth beside her knee. And I can't get her to go to the doctor because, you know, she's very stubborn.
When you have a major traumatic injury, such as a cleat going into the knee, and you've got a stubborn spouse, you've got to obviously use your own first aid jar and your brain and figure out what it is. Squishy things below the surface after trauma are usually a blood clot that is resolving. So here it is. Cleat comes into the knee. It bleeds. A clot forms. It sort of looks like jello, believe it or not, if you took it out. And often it takes a while before it resolves. It can take months. months and months and months. And sometimes we actually have to, rarely, but we actually have to put in a needle and take the clot out if it's really very bothersome.
So it's a blood clot, but even though it's a blood clot, it's not anything to particularly be concerned about.
Exactly.
Because when I think blood clot, I think bad.
Actually, when you think bad with blood clot, those are blood clots that are in the vessels. So, for instance, if you think about Nixon had, I don't think about Nixon that often, but if you think about Nixon, he had recurrent deep vein thrombosis, DVT, and that's a blood clot that can occur in the blood vessels of the leg, and those are the clots that can travel and cause major problems. This is not within the blood vessels, so it doesn't cause a problem. And you bring up a good point. A lot of people think that. They go, blood clot, is it going to travel and is it going to harm me? And the answer is only if it's in the vessel. If it's not in the vessel, it's not going to.
Is she a good soccer player?
Oh, fantastic. Played for the U.S. team as a keeper. So,
really?
So, which is another edition of the stubbornness, I assume.
Got you. Another edition of the stubbornness. So in other words, she is a stubborn person who doesn't always go to the doc.
Yes, exactly. Very much so.
Yeah. Do you play the game?
No, I don't. I don't understand what all of the fuss is about a ball. You know, it's just a ball.
Hey, not so much soccer in this country, but in America, there's lots of fuss about one ball or another from just about at least most of the male population.
And
a lot
the
of
female
the female
population. Are you
too.
Kidding?
Yeah.
It's no matter where this, you know, no matter what sport it is or where it goes, the ball involves society.
You're supportive. You go and cheer her on, right?
I bring a really good book, and I sit on the sidelines.
And you sit on the sidelines.
bring a good book.
I bring a good book, and I always find out what the score is from somebody. when the game is.
Well, if it's soccer, you know, there isn't much to cheer about because the score is usually 1-0.
No, soccer is great. Sometimes it's a score of like 4 or 5.
Ho-hum.
Ho-hum to Tom. I find it useful. Obviously, the book is what suits you.
Anyway, exactly. Nothing to worry about as far as the clot, right?
Nothing to worry about as far as the clot. She should be just fine.
Thanks a lot for
wonderful.
The call.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, here's a listener now in Boise, Idaho. Hi.
Hi there.
What's up?
Well, I'm 47 years old. I took up indoor soccer about a year ago and love it, so I'd recommend your last caller try it. I'm terrible at it, but...
Wait a minute. Indoor soccer?
Indoor.
What's
right.
that? I never heard of that.
You play inside on an artificial turf. And,
oh, but what, in your living room? No.
There's an indoor soccer court. There's actually a couple in Boise,
and you can play in the winter. They have big buildings with a regular-sized soccer field there?
It's a little bit smaller.
You know, Tom, it is clear, absolutely clear, that you are completely unaware of soccer as it exists in America. In where we live in Madison, Wisconsin, we have no fewer than 4
indoor soccer
courts, you know. And I'm going to take you down one day, man, and we're going to play the ball.
Well, I'm pretty busy at that time that you're thinking of asking me. But I'll see if I can work it in. Anyway, how can we help you?
Well, I also started training for a half Ironman triathlon. And being older than 25, I'm actually quite a bit older, I get a lot of aches and pains and my recovery slower. And my doctor had suggested that for some of my muscular aches and stuff that I try some low-level laser light therapy and infrared light therapy, and I'm wondering about it. Is it effective? Does it work? How does it work?
So wait. Let me get this straight. This is what sort of physician? This is your
family doctor.
Family doctor. Now, laser therapy. Now, there's heat that we use. There's ultrasound that we use to warm up the muscles, and as part of physical therapy, that's something that's often used. But laser is something we often use for the superficial areas of the skin. What kind of therapy does your doctor have this in the office? Is it covered by insurance? What does it cost? What are those things about?
I don't know the answers to those because I haven't tried it, but it's not a skin laser. It's a low-level laser and an infrared light.
Well, infrared is there. Infrared gives heat. So infrared, my grandfather, may he rest in peace, he had a World War I injury, lost part of the muscle in his arm. Every night he would come home, because it always ached, he'd put an infrared light, which was a heat lamp. Mm-hmm. They're red light bulbs, and they fit into gooseneck lamps, and they used to be used all the time. Heat lamp near his shoulder, it would feel better, and he did that in the morning and the evening to get rid of his pain. That's different. Infrared is warmth that you can go, that will go beneath the skin, warm up the skin, and help. Laser is basically does not warm up the skin. I mean, it's an energy that can be delivered in other places. But I mention about the money issue because there is charlatanism that is replete in medicine. In other words, there's a lot of goofy stuff out there. And so a lot of the goofy stuff comes from people who are not medically trained. And there's goofy stuff that comes from people who are medically trained. I mean, the medical profession is not replete with quackery, but it certainly has quackery. So my first question out of the box with something like this is, Doctor, are you selling something? If you're selling something, what does it cost? And the reason I mention it is laser is a hot term today, very hot. People are now using laser for snoring, doesn't work. Laser for smoking, doesn't do anything. There's laser for podiatry. I don't mean to get rid of a bunion, which it's used as a knife. Laser to get rid of pain in the feet, doesn't work at all. How much does it cost? Lots and lots and lots of money. So if you undergo something that is a laser treatment, what you want to do is look at a reliable site, a medical site, and find out whether or not a laser treatment works. Infrared, ancient treatment, basically, well, not ancient, but as old as we have basically had lights, we've had infrared lights practically, and that treatment can help with muscular aches and pains.
Okay, thank you.
You're
sure.
Welcome.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate that call. Zorba, let's take a moment to help out Missy in Houghton, Michigan. Seems as though Missy is in the market for a new bed for her baby boy. Quoting, I am writing for information about purchasing a bed for my 2-year-old son. He has scoliosis, 38-degree curve, and is already really tall, often confused with a 3- or 4-year-old. What considerations are important when making our selection?
Well, first of all, if he's got a significant scoliosis, it's always important to make sure you follow up with your doctor, because there are things that you do with scoliosis of a non-operative manner that really counts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from a bed point of view, the answer is you want a bed that makes your child comfortable so that they can sleep without pain. That's the consideration. The type of bed that you're going to use for that may be would be most likely, my recommendation would be a foam mattress with a memory. These are new foam mattresses, not the old foam that is sort of the cheap sponge mattresses, but they are very thick, dense foam mattresses that actually have the ability to remember how you sleep in them. I mean, that is the memory of the plastic that it actually makes with itself. And quite often, people with chronic pain purchase a mattress such as this, and it's more comfortable than a traditional spring mattress. But comfort, that's the bottom line.
Yeah. Now, is this different advice than that you would give to any new parents as far as selecting a crib?
No, not at all. Well, when you're looking at anything with a crib, you want to use something that is certified to be okay to use as a crib, because one of the issues is the crib and the covering on top of the mattress. You have to make sure is a sheet, is not something such as sheepskin, which is what we used to use for comfort for a child. We never use that anymore because of sudden infant death syndrome. And make sure that you follow the usual thing for sort of making sure that your baby is safe. And if you go to our website on the resource page, we'll put some information up there on choosing the right mattress and the right crib for your child.
Yeah, and she's looking, of course, for a bed for a 2-year-old.
That's right.
And that advice.
Well, it might be a crib or a young adult bed, but that information will be on there. There's certain things that you want to follow to make sure. 2-year-olds are not the prime people that we worry about for sudden infant death syndrome, but whenever we talk about kids sleeping, we want to talk about kids' safety.
Mm-hmm. Well, let us know your thoughts by sending them in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have our recipe coming up. This one from a listener in Georgetown, Kentucky, Royan Betty. Sounds good. Royan's vegetable pie. Lots more of your questions, some more research coming up. Do you believe that kids tend to look like their dads? That's our medical myth buster coming up later in the hour here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. With Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. A line open for you if you have a question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. To the caller, Zorba, after our recipe, and for this one, we welcome from Georgetown, Kentucky, regular listener Royanne Betty. Royanne, hi.
Hi, how are you all?
Fine. Thanks so much for submitting the recipe, and congratulations on winning our fabulous prize, Zorba's Cookbook. This one is called Royanne's Vegetable Pie.
That's right. It sounds like a wonderful recipe. I looked at this. Where'd you come up with this?
Well, actually, it's really mislabeled because I stole the recipe from my friend Joanna Hurd.
Joanna's pie.
Yeah, Joanna's pie. It should be Royanne's stolen vegetable pie. Now, I like that. That's kind of sexy. Royanne's stolen veggie
I
pie.
Like that too,
you know,
yeah.
It's like what got stolen.
It makes it more attractive.
Absolutely.
It gives it a little aura of mystery.
Yes,
it gives an aura
right.
of mystery.
Right.
I think we're going to rename it Royanne's Stolen Vegetable
Good.
Pie. I like it. Okay, so let's do the recipe. We start out with one large white potato, or I've got to hear that you sometimes use sweet potatoes.
Yes, you can use sweet potatoes, you can use new potatoes, anything. Basically, the potato goes in the bottom of the pie dish instead of a crust or something, so you can substitute any potato you like.
This will change the taste to some extent.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Sweet potato certainly is totally different from, white potato.
Which is interesting. You could try it both ways and see what you like.
It'd be great. So we parboil it and we slice it. How big are the slices? Thick, thin?
Pretty thin, actually, and just layer them, parboil them and just put them in the bottom of a pie pan just so that they'll cook through when you put it in the oven later.
Okay, so these are thin slices. Mm-hmm. One large zucchini, seeded and sliced thinly.
A large zucchini, seeded and sliced thinly.
Now, I have to tell you, I don't tend to seed my zucchinis. I mean, I seed my cucumbers when I use them, but you always seed your zucchinis before you use them in things like this?
I don't always seed them. Joanna does a lot, I think. But I think if you seed them in this recipe, it keeps them from being quite so soft, and it just gives it a little more body.
Uh-huh. So Joanna, the one from whom you stole this recipe, takes out the seeds.
Yeah.
But Royanne is not big on the seed part. I hope Joanna's not listening. Yeah, she might come up with something. Okay, one large summer squash, sliced thinly.
A large summer squash, sliced thinly.
Yeah, I like this. You know, we've got squash. We could use an acorn or something like that. I like it. One medium onion chopped.
A medium onion chopped.
What color? White, Spanish? What kind of onion do you use?
You can use any onion or use scallions. That's the beauty of this recipe. It's really very versatile.
Versatile.
And so whatever onion you like, if you like a stronger and you want a stronger taste, I usually just use a white onion.
Mm-hmm.
The red one sort of... changes color, but just whatever you like.
Whatever you like with that. Okay, green pepper chopped, or sweet red or yellow pepper
mm-hmm.
chopped.
One pepper chopped.
Okay, two large tomatoes sliced.
Two large tomatoes sliced.
Now, you always use a fresh tomato or do you use a canned tomato for that?
Oh, I use everything fresh. In fact, that's the whole key element.
So it'll taste
and
much better.
And if the farmer's market isn't going, we have a great co-op here and plenty of places to get good vegetables.
Right. Half teaspoon of salt.
Half a little tea salt.
Half teaspoon of lemon pepper.
Half a little tea lemon pepper.
Yeah, lemon pepper.
Mm-hmm. What's lemon pepper?
Mm-hmm. Well, you buy it at the store. You buy it at the store.
And it's lemon-flavored pepper?
Yeah. I have a question. Do you buy little containers of pepper? I mean, I tend to use fresh ground pepper, and the lemon pepper is pre-ground. Do you buy fresh containers, or do you tend to use the same container for a couple of years?
I don't like to use spices for that long.
Yeah.
And so I tend to buy the smallest quantities. And at the co-op here, in Lexington, we're near Lexington, mm-hmm. you can actually just buy it in Ziploc bags, whatever quantities you want.
And I agree with you, because what happens is the aliphatic hydrocarbons, that's where the smells of the lemon on the whole are going to dissipate over time. So that's what I would use. Some fresh herbs to taste, whatever's around, dill, basil, rosemary.
Fresh herbs.
That's right. And in our area, we've got co-ops, and also we can get fresh herbs at the Asian markets, and that is the cheapest place I have found to find basil off-season, because it's not prepackaged in these fancy plastic packages costing $2 a pop, and you can get a nice large bunch for a dollar. So that's where I go. Two eggs lightly beaten. Half a cup of milk. I assume that's 2%, or do you use whole milk?
I use 2%. You can use whole milk or skim milk, mm-hmm. but I think the 2% is a nice compromise.
Yeah, I think whole milk should be relabeled full fat milk, and then we'll see what it does on the marketplace. You know, whole, you know, so 2% is like less than whole. 1.5 cups of shredded cheese.
Cup and a half of shredded cheese.
And I can see from this you can use Swiss, cheddar, four cheese mix. What's your favorite?
Anything that's lower in fat, I just get like a four cheese mix, or mm-hmm. I get fresh, I like fresh Parmesan even on top. The whole idea of it is just fresh veggies, a little bit of egg and milk to bind it, and then layer things, and to put whatever cheese you like.
Yeah.
It's really a very versatile recipe.
Okay, let's make the dish. Preheat the oven to 400 degrees, then coat the pie pan with a butter-flavored non-stick spray. Wonderful, because you want to make sure it doesn't stick. Lay the partially cooked, the parboiled potato slices, either the regular potato or sweet potato, on the bottom of the pan. Then layer the rest of the sliced veggies with a sprinkle of cheese between each layer, so it's nice and sprinkled, ending with the tomatoes on top. Sprinkle the top layer with the remaining cheese. Then, in a medium bowl, mix the salt, lemon, pepper, herbs, and the eggs and milk. Pour that mix over the veggies. Bake for 40 minutes and serve. Sounds delicious.
But now, I've got to ask this question, Royanne. Is it okay with you if I would, like, throw a little meat or something in here?
You can do that. In fact, it's great if you want a little more body to it. You could put some sausage, but I like just the low-fat veggie sausage
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Yeah,
Joanna took this to a retreat that I went to, and everybody liked it so much they all wanted the recipe. And she's done that with it before.
Are you going to give anything to Joanna for letting
you?
I
did this with her permission, and she's going to get the cookbook because she's really the creative one.
Royanne, I've got to tell you what a pleasure it's been talking with you. I spent 9 months in Lexington a lot of years ago, and hearing the lilt of your voice brings back those sweet memories of Kentucky.
Did you go to school here, or...?
I did a very unsuccessful 9 months of my life, I might say, but I loved the state, and I hated your basketball team.
Oh, that's terrible. Well, at least it was only 9 months and not 9 years.
Yeah, right. Thanks. Well, if you want to talk 9 bad years of my life, I can get into that, too, and in a different context. Thanks a lot for submitting the recipe.
You're welcome.
And for sending us this winning recipe, Royanne, or perhaps Joanna, as she said, gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
For today's recipe, send a stamped, self-addressed, business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
And if you want this recipe to go and the nutritional analysis, just go to our website. You can see it there. You can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
.800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, and a line is open now for you. Maybe you have a holiday-related question for our good doc. 800-462-7413 is the number to call. And Zorba, a listener, joins in now in Shawnee, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Yes, I have some questions about diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
I come from a lower middle-class family. I don't have any insurance. And I haven't really ever had the chance to go to a doctor to find out. I have a bit of family history with diabetes, but but I'm not for sure if I have it, and I think I may, but I don't know what the symptoms are. And I know I constantly have to eat to, I don't know, maintain a blood sugar or unmaintain. I'm not quite for sure, but I was just calling to see if I could get some general information.
Well, so is that the only thing you have to, you feel you have to eat a lot? Do you feel bad, or what else is going on? Anything?
I feel like I want to go to sleep if I don't eat, or I get a very, very bad headache on the back right-hand side of my brain, which almost seems like it migrates around from the right to left lobe.
Well, first of all, let's talk about eating. Well, welcome to America. Everybody feels like they have to eat all the time. It's not a sign of diabetes, although obesity causes diabetes in America. But a lot of people say, gee, I have to eat all the time. And that is not necessarily a sign of diabetes. That's a sign of a lot of other things. There are cultural signs involved in that. Some people have hypoglycemia. There are a lot of issues involved. That's not a symptom. Frankly, for adult onset diabetes, there's not one symptom that's there. If you've got juvenile diabetes, type 1, that used to be called juvenile diabetes, generally you would start to lose weight and you would have what's called polydipsia, got to drink a lot of water, polyuria, urinate a lot, and polyphagia, which meant that you ate a lot. And you're, how old are you?
I'm 28.
Okay. Let me talk a bit about this family history. At what age did they get their diabetes?
I'm not quite for sure. We have a lot of larger people on my mother's side of the family. And a lot of them have, I guess, severe diabetes.
When you say large people, you mean how much do they weigh in at?
Portly.
Portly, you see.
Very rotund.
See, portly. In Wisconsin, we call it big boned. It's the same exact thing. Big boned and portly. Now, that produces adult onset diabetes or type 2 diabetes. That is really part of that. And that type of diabetes often, years ago, I was taught it occurs in your 40s and 50s. I've now seen it as young as 15 years of age. You can't tell if you have diabetes without a blood test. Without a blood sugar, you can't tell. But your symptoms don't sound specifically like diabetes at all. And unfortunately, what you've noticed is you cannot go for a blood test and just call up a doctor because they're not going to do it unless they actually see you. And you're concerned. What I would recommend doing, I don't think from what you told me, I am not concerned about your health with this. To find out about diabetes, what you can do, we'll put it on the resource page. You link to the American Diabetic Association. They have lots of good things on type 2 diabetes and adult diabetes. And most importantly, how to avoid it. So what's your weight? What's your height?
I'm about 6'2 and about 260. Okay. I put on about 60 pounds after an injury.
Well, that's the issue. The issue is you want to get rid of those 60 pounds. That puts you at risk for diabetes. So getting tested for diabetes is one thing, but the fact is that puts you at risk. That 60 pounds definitely puts you at risk. If you keep the weight on with your history, you're at risk for diabetes no matter what the blood sugar shows, no matter what it is. So my recommendation is, number one, exercise. Really important to get that blood sugar out of your bloodstream. Start to reduce weight. Really important. Learn about diabetes. And then when you've got some health insurance, go get your blood checked. And also you can look around your area for a free diabetes testing. Because sometimes if you call up the local diabetes association, and there's one listed in, you know, all around the country, if you Google the word American Diabetes Association local chapter, you'll find a local chapter. And quite often, once or twice or three times a year, they have free testing. That's when I would go and get it. Okay, good luck. Try to lose that weight. It's really going to make a difference.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-462-7413, toll free. Zorba, let's get to our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and see if we can help out Jacob in Fort Bragg, California. Seems Jacob has an issue with razor burn. He writes, "Dear Dr. Z, every time I shave, I break out on my neck and throat. I almost always use aftershave lotion, but worry that may be contributing to the problem. How can I prevent razor burn?"
Well, the answer is the aftershave lotion might be the problem. The problem is looking back at the cosmetics that you're using. I mean, men don't like to think of it as cosmetics, but shaving, it's cosmetic. I mean, that's what they advertise on TV, guys, you know, the handsome guy shaving and smiling. So I'd look at the razor. I would make sure the razor is, you know, is a razor that has three or four in it, you know, that type of razor. There's several on the market, Gillette being just the most common one, but there's, I would get a razor that's a good razor. I would try different shaving creams. Ones with aloe will tend to be easier on the face. There are a variety of different shaving creams that you have to try. You want one that has moisturizing cream. Quite often, that in itself will make a huge difference. The aftershave lotion is often secondary because it tends to dry the skin out. But I would stop the aftershave lotion completely for a week or two and see if that's the issue, because that's the easiest thing. So shaving cream, new razor, change the razor once a week, and then make sure that you stop the lotion and see what that is. One of them is probably doing it. And if not,
my solution.
Tom's solution. That's it. And tell them about your solution, Tom. Tom has got the best solution overall. It is a...
Don't shave.
Don't shave. It's a beard, man. You know, or shave every 3 or 4 days, you know, and look like Brad Pitt.
We like hearing from you. Keep your comments, questions, and tips coming. Just send them along in an email to...
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some interesting research coming up, more of your phone calls, our medical myth buster as well, here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Callers waiting, but a line open for you at 800-462-7413. Before we're back to the phone, Zorba, some new research on attention deficit disorder and kids' brains. It's ADHD. Is that the same as attention deficit disorder?
Well, attention deficit disorder is a broad term. H is the hyperactivity associated with it. So some kids just have ADD, can't pay attention in class, don't get their homework done, lots of issues with attention. And then you have the hyperactivity added to it. Kids that are squirreling around, can't sit in the seat, much more disruptive to the classroom. That's what this research is about.
And tell us about it.
What they looked at was they looked at brain maturation. And this was looking at the thickness in the brain, different parts of the brain, looking at the motor cortex. That's the part of the brain that develops, that basically looks at the arms and the legs, how we move our body, how we hit a ball, and so on. And they looked at the cerebral cortex, part of our brain that does what we call executive function. Should I do this? Should I not do this? Should I get up from my chair? Should I sit in my chair? And so on. And what they found was the motor cortex tended to develop a little bit faster in the kids with ADHD. In other words, their ability to move their arms and their legs was faster than normal kids. And the cerebral cortex, the part of the brain that says, wait a minute, don't move around, appears to develop a little bit more slowly in kids who have ADHD. So in other words, their muscles move, but their ability to say, hey, don't get out of the seat, is a little bit behind in terms of development.
This is some of that aha research.
Really, right, yeah. Right. Absolutely. It's aha research if it turns out to be true. It's one study. They looked at 20 kids, not a lot of kids. But once again, they're looking for a biological basis. Is there a biological basis of looking at ADHD? And what's actually happening in the body? Is this just behavioral? Doesn't appear to be. It appears to be biological.
Isn't there still a school of thought that maybe this is all a myth, that there really isn't any such thing as
attention deficit? Well, you know, anything that concerns children and behavior, what we do is we always have controversy. And the controversy is good because, you know, we don't know scientifically exactly where things are. So there's a school of thought that says, wait a minute, there really isn't ADHD. It doesn't exist. A school of thought that says, wait a minute, it really does exist. I'm of the belief that attention deficit disorder with and without hyperactivity is real, but it's overdiagnosed. And that's part of the issue, and that's a real phenomenon.
And this research lends credibility to that belief that there really is such a thing.
Absolutely. This research is an attempt to give it a scientific basis to see what's actually happening with these kids. And if you've got this scientific basis, let's assume it may help you with diagnosis. That may help you determine who will do better on medications and who will not, who does better with just behavioral counseling, and who does not. It's a step forward.
800-462-7413, toll free. And a listener now in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I am calling with the question whether or not nursing a baby can affect cholesterol levels in the mother.
Hmm.
I recently requested a cholesterol check simply to get a baseline. I had no symptoms of any sort. I turned 40. And I have a 14-month-old son that I'm weaning from nursing and thought it would be a good idea to get to an idea of where things were. My results were high, which surprised me because I have kept a vegan diet since high school, and I also lead a very active lifestyle with lots of regular exercise. So my question was whether or not the nursing might have skewed my numbers and how long after my son is weaned I should wait to be retested.
How high are those numbers?
My total was 251. The LDL was 178.
Okay. Tell me about your family history. Mom, dad, heart disease on one side of the family or both sides?
Not much of a history. My father has high blood pressure and a little bit of a cholesterol issue, but it's all under control. There's no history on my mother's side at all.
Okay. So, first of all, I am not sure precisely how breastfeeding would affect cholesterol. I've never read anything that shows that it makes a significant reduction or an increase in cholesterol. On the whole, I think it's something that would be in the medical literature because people do get tested when they're breastfeeding. And I don't know, frankly, how it would affect it. Diet, on the other hand, we know affects it for some people and not all. You're on a vegan diet. You know, usually vegan diets are great. I mean, I assume you're not eating lots of trans fats on your vegan diet because anyone on a vegan diet is going to be good with their diet, right? Have,
mm-hmm.
you know, a well-balanced vegan diet and you exercise. And what that leaves us with is the genetic predisposition. In other words, some people produce more cholesterol in their liver than others. That's what it leaves us with. And so what do we do about it? You know, you're a 40-year-old woman. You don't smoke cigarettes. You jog. You exercise. When we look at heart disease, it is a constellation of terms. It's not one part that counts. And in fact, if you look at the Framingham Heart Study, there's something called the Heart Attack Risk Calculator. And that'll be on the resource page of our website, the Heart Attack Risk Calculator. And this is very interesting. You put in your age, you put in whether you're male or female, you put in your cholesterol, you put in your blood pressure. What's your blood pressure now?
My blood pressure is 91 over 73.
Unbelievable blood pressure. You put in whether you smoke or you don't smoke, and you put this in, and it will tell you what the risk is in the next 10 years of anything happening to you. So it judges whether or not you need to be on a pill. So the first time you put it in, you put in your total cholesterol of 251. And the second time you put it in, you put in a cholesterol of 200. Just make an assumption that you're on a pill. And it won't change this at all, let me tell you. You are at such minimal risk. Mm. What is your HDL, by the way, the good cholesterol?
My HDL was 57.
See, so you've got a dynamite HDL. I mean, your HDL is awesome. That's the upper 10% of the population, maybe 20% max. Dynamite HDL, great diet. Your LDL cholesterol is somewhat elevated. It's only one minimal factor. You are a good example of somebody who should not go on a cholesterol-lowering medication.
Okay.
Now, you're a good example. One other point. When you measure cholesterol, it varies by 10 to 15% around the mean. So if I measured you for 30 days in a row, your cholesterol would vary a bit by 10%. This might be the high point of your variation. The HDL doesn't change that much, but the LDL. One test, I don't think much of it. I'd get it tested again in a year. But frankly, breastfeed your baby, have an enjoyable life, stay away from all the bad stuff, which you're doing right now,
mm-hmm.
and don't be that overly concerned. Question,
you're nursing boy or girl?
A little boy.
Little boy. Tell me, does he look like you or like his dad?
He looks like me.
That's what everybody tells me.
Well, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you. I have learned so much. I appreciate your time.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Well,
thank you. My pleasure.
As you know, Zorba, I was linking our caller to our medical myth buster, and she tends to bust this myth. Our myth today could settle some arguments for new parents who are wondering who their child looks like. It's long been thought, it says here, that kids naturally resemble their fathers, both boy and girl kids, I guess. Is this true?
Absolutely. Undoubtedly. 100%.
That is our last caller was flat out lying.
She is flat out wrong. I am flat out right. That's exactly it. But this is an important part, important from an evolutionary point of view of paternity. I mean, a child knows their mother, but as Shakespeare said, it is a wise child who knows his father. That's a Shakespeare quote.
Okay.
Because paternity has been an issue throughout the ages, and it's an issue from the point of view of whether or not a dad is going to take care of their kid, if you can imagine, not in today's society, but in older society. So back about 10 years ago, there was an article in Nature. Nature is a prestigious journal like Science. Mm-hmm. Those are the two most important scientific journals out. And looked at about a little over 100 people trying to match pictures of their children that they didn't know. So in other words, they had a picture of a parent, a dad, and a mom. And then they had pictures of kids at 1 year and at 10 years and at 20 years of age. Okay,
yeah.
You got the mom and the dad, and you've got the kids. And let's say, let's try to max up the dads with the moms and dads and find out what happens. And lo and behold, they found that when they took headshots of children to see who they would match up with, they could correctly match them up more often than not to the dad. In other words, these are random observers, and they say, oh, okay, this boy at a young age, at 1 year of age, looks like the dad, and they'd be correct. At 10 years of age, hey, looks like the dad. We can picture it out. At 20 years of age, uh-uh. In other words, by 20, they couldn't do the matchup, but at a young age, they could. When they did it with the moms, the correlation hardly existed. They were more likely to match up these headshots with children.
This was a 10-year-old, a ghost study of how many people?
Well, this is a little over 100 people that did the matchup. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's much more likely that children look like their dads. You look like you don't actually believe this research.
Very good at reading.
You seem like you are looking askance.
I tried to
at
keep
this
you
particular
from,
myth. Yeah. But I can read you, Tom.
Well, now you have four. They all look like you.
100%, absolutely. You know, I walk down the street and they go, "Looks like Zorba."
I know your kids.
Looks like
I know
Zorba.
What they look like. I know what you look like.
Not like me at all. One boy, Eli, looks like me. That's it. Eli looks like me.
Okay. Well, if you have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust, just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. Want to talk with Zorba? It's holiday time. Do you have a holiday question you'd like to ask of Zorba? 1-800-462-7413, the number to call. And a listener now, Zorba in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Hello.
Hello, Tom.
What's up?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a giant synovial cyst in my calf, my right calf. And when I wrap it, my leg looks normal. But when if I don't wrap it for a day or so, it swells up. And I presume or assume that this is the synovial fluid. And I like to know that when I wrap it, where does that fluid go? Where does it hang out? And does it do any harm to the other parts of my body?
Well, good. That's a very interesting question. First of all, the fluid is constantly being made and reabsorbed into the body. In other words, it's not just there and stays there. The body is always making fluid and getting fluid away, and that's the way fluid is. There's sort of a flow there, kind of like a lake. And what happens is when you wrap it up, that fluid your body does not produce as much fluid. If the fluid were sitting in the joint, you would tend to have pain, and as soon as you unwrapped it, it would kind of swell up instantly. So when you unwrap it, how long does it take to redevelop?
I'd say a day.
A day. So that's how long. That's what's happening is your body says, hey, it's got some extra space here. I'm going to make a little bit more fluid.
The
lake doesn't get big enough and doesn't have enough pressure to say, hey, it's got to go back down the dam. It's sort of like you dam it up when you wrap it. And when you unwrap it, the lake, just like any other lake, fills up until it gets to a point that it goes back down the drain. which is in the joint in the synovium, and that's what happens. So you just produce less, and then you produce more.
Okay. Should I get rid of the cyst?
Well, you know, there are always issues of whether or not it's going to work or whether or not the cyst will come back. So let me throw the back to you. What'd your doc say?
How attached to you? Are you getting to love and to know your cyst?
Well, I wish my other leg looked like my swollen leg because I have sick legs. So my doctor is kind of scratching his head, and he sent me to the orthopedic surgeon, and the surgeon said there was nothing he could do. So we're back kind of to square one.
Well, the reason is with some of these cysts, some of these cysts, they do surgery on them, and then they pop up somewhere else. This is a manageable problem. You know, you wrap it, you wear a support stocking, or you wrap it up with an ACE wrap.
Okay.
Which do you do? Do you use an ACE wrap? So, you know, either that or a support stocking, and that's how you adjust to it. That's kind of the best way to do that.
Okay. Well, this has been most informative. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Zorba, before we go, let's share a listener tip. Recently, we were talking about plantar fasciitis, and you recommended taping your foot to help the discomfort. Well, Janet in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, has a tip that's right up your alley. And by right up your alley, I mean frugal. She writes, I have dealt with this condition a number of times, and using that white tape every day can get expensive. I use duct tape instead. I buy a big roll, which is much cheaper than the white medical tape and works just as well.
I think that's just absolutely fine. It's funny. I think of duct tape as being much stickier and much more difficult to be on the skin. But the fact is, the glue is the same, and the stickiness may be the same. And if duct tape works, great. I love it. Any chance to save money, that's somebody who I embrace.
That's the Zorba I know.
There you go.
A reminder to you that the instructions for taping your feet are located on our resources page on our website, which is
ZorbaPastor.org.
Do you have a tip to share? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba, we'll see you next time.
A pleasure, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org.
Call day or night with your question for Zorba at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg are the two goofballs on the other side of the glass. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. And our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping for your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
National support for Zorba Pastor on Your Health comes from the AED Superstore, helping people save lives with Philips HeartStart automated external defibrillators for business, school, travel, and home. Available at AEDSuperstore.com. Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1213-Z.
PRI, Public Radio International.